This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A conference on information technology and cybersecurity is being held at Western Michigan University today and tomorrow. Coming up, we'll talk with Alan Ray, a professor of business information systems in Western's Hayworth College of Business, about the challenges business face and how colleges and universities are working to address them. But first, the group Voters Not Politicians is nearing its goal of collecting enough signatures to put their proposal on the Michigan ballot in November of 2018. They want to change the way that boundaries are drawn for congressional and state legislative districts in the state. 316,000 signatures from registered voters in Michigan are needed to make the ballot. Bridge senior writer Ron French recently looked at how the group wants to end partisan gerrymandering, the experience in another state, and a possible legal battle ahead. Ron French, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about what it is that Voters Not Politicians is trying to fix. What's the problem that they see? What do they want to do about it?
Sure. In Michigan and the majority of states, district boundaries are drawn every 10 years after the new census comes out to reapportion so that the populations are fairly equal. But Michigan, along with most states, those lines are drawn by some political group, either the legislature or the governor or a combination of the two. What happens is then the political party that is in power in that state, if one political party controls the legislature and the governorship, can tweak the lines to help their own party. There's nothing new about this. It's been happening for over 100 years. The difference, if anything, is that with computer power we have today, redrawing of lines can be a lot more effectively used to empower one party and disempower another. So that's the problem. Okay. And so what this group is trying to do is take the power away from politicians to draw those lines and give it to a group that is nonpartisan. And in their proposal, what they want to do is have a commission formed, an independent commission that would have four Democrats, four Republicans, and five people who are unaffiliated with either party. They would draw the lines, and to make sure that it is bipartisan, for those lines to go into effect, at least two members of that commission's Republican and Democrat and unaffiliated must vote yes. So it's not as if the Democrats and the unaffiliated can get together and say, let's screw the Republicans. This has to be bipartisan lines, the way that they're proposing.
So some other states have looked to change their process for drawing the lines for the state legislature and Congress, including California. You talked to some people out there. Explain how California does this.
Sure. California is a good example if Michigan voters want to know what could happen here. California is the closest template to what Michigan is proposing. In California, they also have a bipartisan commission made of Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated voters. And their commission has been in place for more than a decade, so it's long enough to see a track record to see what actually happens. So what has happened there? I was surprised by a couple of things. One, you do have more competitive races, which is the key, I think, for a group like Voters Not Politicians. They want politicians to have to talk to everyone and not just be able to count on their base of their own party to get them elected. So you have more close elections in California. When you look at in the most recent election in California for Congress, and you look and compare that to Michigan, the seven closest congressional races were all in California. And among races that were within 15 percentage points, so that, you know, that's not even that close to 15, but even going as far out as being a race that was 15 points separated or closer, 13 of those 15 are in California. So it does create closer races, which hopefully, I think this group would say, would mean that politicians are more responsive to voters. But the fear from Republicans here is that, oh, my God, they're going to take away our power and everything. In California, it really didn't change the makeup either of the legislature in California, the state legislature, or Congress. It made the races closer. Some incumbents lost when this first went into place, but the actual makeup did not alter that much. It did make things more competitive, though.
Well, but another way of looking at that is that California, to that point, Democrats were getting the majority of the votes statewide for Congress and their state assembly, and the Democrats had the majority of the seats. Whereas in Michigan, Democrats have been getting, the majority of the votes in some cases for, say, a state house statewide, but then the Republicans are in a pretty comfortable majority. I guess I'm just wondering if the Michigan situation isn't a little different going into this than what California was prior to their redistricting reform.
It might be. That's a good point, Gordon. I know that in 2016 in Michigan, in the state house, Democrats and Republicans both earned total about the same number of votes. It's very close. But Republicans won a clear majority of the seats. And so it seems like Democrats are being packed into certain districts. So it could be that if the race is more competitive and the lines were drawn, we could see a bit of a shift. I can tell you that the majority, all the opposition that I know of to this are among Republican leaders in the state.
And that point about packing voters into one district, that is part of the reason you get these very non-competitive races. It's actually for the party that's in the minority. They are winning their seats by large margins because, you're trying to put as many members of the other party as you can into the smallest number of districts. Isn't that the best way to describe it?
Very well put. You will have districts both at the state level and at the congressional level where one party's candidate will win by 40, 50, 60 points. You can make an argument if I'm in a congressional district that represents Detroit proper. Detroit's a very heavily Democratic city. It would be hard to draw a congressional line where that is going to be a very competitive race between Democrats and Republicans. And there are probably some examples of that on the Republican side also. But there is no reason to believe that there can't be more competitive districts than there are now.
So as we talk right now, does it appear that voters, not politicians, is going to be able to gather enough signatures to meet the state's requirement for getting a proposal on the ballot in 2018?
Almost without a doubt, they will. They already have over 250,000 signatures, and they need a little over 300,000. Even those who oppose this effort believe they will reach their mark easily. Even the opponents are quite impressed with how fast they've been able to gather signatures, which says a lot about the organization, and it says a lot about the appeal in the public for something that takes power away from politicians. We have this, and you see it at the national level too, Gordon, where this whole sort of drain the swamp attitude is out there. It's like that politicians aren't serving us. If we can put power more in the hands of people, things would be better. But anyway, so there is a general belief that yes, they will absolutely get enough signatures to get on the ballot if it survives some court challenges.
Now, we'll talk about the court challenges in a moment, but I want to go back here for just a moment to something that I find quite interesting about voters, not politicians. As far as we know, it doesn't appear they're paying anybody to gather petition signatures. And for a long time, I know people I've talked to in politics have said, conventional wisdom is you have to spend $1 million up front just to collect petition signatures. It appears that voters, not politicians, is defying that conventional wisdom right now.
Absolutely. The people I talk to say that if you want to run a fairly successful campaign, you got to assume you got to have at least $3 million. They are doing it with very small donations, and they're doing it with all volunteers. They have about 3,000 volunteers that have been around the state, and they're not just going to heavily Democratic areas. At the time that I spoke to leaders in that effort a few weeks ago, the highest percentage of voters that they had signed petitions was in Ottawa County on the west side of the state, which is a Republican area. There's some Democratic strongholds there.
One of the most conservative areas of the state, probably.
Sure, absolutely. And so you can see that this has cross-party appeal. But yes, what they've been able to do is they've used that grassroots effort as an advantage for them, because they can't, they at the moment at least, can avoid being labeled as being in the pocket of Republicans or Democrats or a certain organization that is pushing something, because this is really voter-driven. And from everything we understand, there's a lot of support for this both among Republicans and Democrats at the grassroots level.
So we've alluded to potential legal challenges. What could happen that even if voters, not politicians, was able to gather the signatures required, and they're from registered voters in Michigan and they meet all those legal requirements, what could happen that keeps that from getting on the ballot next year?
Many petition drives eventually end up in court, you know, challenging one thing or another. And it seems as if the Michigan Republican Party is gearing up to try to challenge this in court. The sense I get is the Republican leaders in the state feel court may be the best way to stop this, to be honest. They have legitimate reasons to believe this isn't good policy. But at the court level, it's not about whether it's a good policy or not. It's whether the petition is proper. And their argument in court, according to Bob Brandt, may be this, that the changes that this petition wants to make to the Constitution are too broad, that you can make through a voter petition small tweaks to the Constitution in very specific areas. But if it's broad and it changes a lot of the Constitution, it affects a lot of pieces of the Constitution, then it can only be changed through a constitutional convention. But other people say this is pretty narrow. So it will go to court. That will be one of the big arguments they make about it. We just don't know whether when it eventually gets to the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, whether the justices will believe that.
And Bob LeBrant cites an earlier case as the example that he is hoping comes to fruition here. In the same case, it was it seems to me, reading your story, a much broader government reform, but it was thrown out by the court.
Absolutely. And this was in 2008. It was an effort called Reform Michigan Government Now. I'm sure some of you remember that. It was going to radically change the state. Everything from the number of Supreme Court justices to the number of people in the legislature. It included redistricting. And again, it was the sort of thing that probably had a lot of public support. In fact, one poll on it showed there was about 70% support for a ballot measure, which is crazy high. But it was thrown out in court because Bob LeBrant was able to argue that it changed too much of the Constitution for a specific voter effort like this, and it needed to go to a constitutional convention. But that was very broad. This deals specifically with redistricting. So I think it may be an uphill battle to make that argument in the Supreme Court on this particular effort.
What should we look for next, Ron?
I think next what you're going to see is they're going to announce probably in late fall, early December, whatever, that they've reached the number of petitions that they want to gather. They are trying to scrub those signatures before they turn them in. They're having an organization look at them and try to eliminate some of the ones that are duplicated before they turn them in. But there'll be some announcements. They will turn in, I wouldn't doubt they're turning in at least 400,000 signatures so they can lose some. And then there'll be a process where the state looks at those and declares whether they actually have enough to get on the ballot or not. After that is when you will probably see some court challenges filed.
Ron French is senior writer for Bridge. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Links to the stories on the Voters Not Politicians ballot campaign, California's reapportionment process, and the potential legal battles can be found at bridgemi.com and at wmuk.org.